This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751, or send in your question through the website www.beatyourgenes.org. Good evening, everybody. It's Nate G here, along with Dr. Doug Lyle. Dr. Lyle, how are you doing this fine evening?
Very good. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. We are broadcasting live from the Fasting Escape Retreat Center here. And for those of you who want to listen to us live, you can listen to us on blogtalkradio.com/beatyourgenes. And you can listen to us live on that website. Call in live. Got the number 657-383-0751. So we're broadcasting live from the Fasting Escape Retreat Center, but we are not going to be talking about fasting today. We're going to be talking about relationships and sex and love. So Dr. Lyle, you ready to hit it?
Oh, wow. That just perks my ears right up. Okay. All right.
All right. So Dr. Lyle, this first question is with regards to your advice. Several dozen episodes back where you made the case and you laid out the logic for a woman to actually wait for 10 paid dates. That means the man has to pay for her date 10 times until having sex.
Mm-hmm.
So this listener sent us a question. Dear Dr. Lyle, I'm a 34-year-old man. I'm a big fan of the show. Your podcasts have helped me out greatly and dovetail very closely with my personal experiences. That's why I was shocked to hear you recommend that a couple should wait 10 paid dates until having sex. I'm at the other end of the spectrum. I almost exclusively try to push for sex on the first date when I'm single, and I'm often successful. I would never, ever wait more than 3 dates to have sex, no matter how alluring the romantic prospect. If it didn't happen by the first date, my third date is an invitation to dinner and watch a movie at my place after getting shot down. And if it didn't happen by then, I'd just move on, assuming that the woman was just using me for free entertainment, validation, etc.
I couldn't have written this better had I wanted to. All right. I will peek around on the far side of this to give some, as we might say, validation to this guy's position. I can understand there are men that feel that if a woman looks him over for a few times and then is being resistant and the guy is spending some money, he may feel like he's, quote, being used for free entertainment. But women don't use men for free entertainment this way. I mean, maybe 1 in 100 would, but I can see why someone could think that that would be possible, but that's not what's taking place. So on the other hand, if you're a woman and you just listen to this, we should put this question in a bronze plaque. Okay, this is exactly why I recommend this. So notice as we listen to this that he's, quote, done this often. So and he would never do this, and this is how he does it. If he gets shot down on date one and date two, then there's one more shot, and then if you don't come through on date three, then you're out. He's done. Listen to this. Okay, this is a guy speaking from the heart. And he's all, you know, he listens to this show. He's theoretically listened to the logic. You know, some of the ideas have been helpful. Listen to his, he skips past any of the logic here and doesn't, you know, is basically clueless as to why it is that this is such an important strategy, which is why this is such an important strategy. The male is basically saying, if you don't give me access to your eggs, by the way, every sex act in nature for humans, let's just compute the cost. There's a 5% chance of pregnancy, 1 out of 20. So of unprotected sex in the Stone Age, basically, environment. So where the female's fertile, the male's fertile, and there's no birth control. 1 out of 20. The amount of child rearing that female is going to do for if that sperm hits that egg is going to be phenomenal. There's going to be an unbelievable biological price that's going to go on. This is going to go on, let's call it 20 years. That's not a bad guess. Maybe it's 15, 16, but let's just call it 20 for statistical, neatness. 20 years, 1 in 20 shot. That means every sex act in nature for our species is essentially 1 year of motherhood. That is a hell of a lot of work. Okay? This guy wants to trade no more than a couple of dinner dates and an invitation to his apartment for a year of your mothering. That's the deal. Okay? Of course that's the deal he wants. And he's attractive enough and assertive enough, he's been able to pull it off. So people have been biting on that. And so I'm telling women, don't bite on it. Okay? It's not in your best interest. If it's such a great idea, in other words, now, of course, if you're in weak knees delta and you're all excited about it and you just can't pass it up because he's just too, it's like lamb chops, you just can't pass it up. Fine. No problem. But that's your business, and I have no interest in being involved in moralizing that. This isn't a moralizing issue at all. It's an issue of what women feel like after they allow this to happen. They weren't necessarily that into it. And then it turns out, they were hopeful that this guy was actually invested in them psychologically and emotionally, and that this had long-term prospects. Now, most women, most of the time, that's actually the circumstances that they're seeking. And yet, if they're interested in a guy, they may feel like they're getting pushed. Well, of course you're getting pushed. You're getting pushed behind the casual mating strategy. And you're not getting pushed behind the pair bond strategy. Pair bond strategy is not going to say, well, after date three, you know what? I was really interested in you. I thought your looks were great. I thought your personality was great. I thought your intelligence was great. I thought your life circumstances were great. Incredibly interested. Feel like I'm getting 10% better than I had coming to me, and I'm freaking falling in love with you. But, if you don't give it up after date three, I'm out of here. You got to be kidding. Okay? All right? So, women, pay attention to this guy's comment. This was not directed at couples. This was directed at women. And there are a couple of treacheries that are part of the human dilemma. Treachery number one is the casual mating strategy of the male as they bluff and push and deceive the female into casual mating when the female really wouldn't want a casual mating situation. And she does not want to be walking away pregnant with a guy who's heading over the hill because he's not that into him. Okay, that is tragedy number one in human nature. Tragedy number two in human nature is the girl's not that into you, but she feels like you're a good provisioner and solid dude, gets married to you, but really winds up wanting to sleep with other people, does sleep with other people, and you wind up provisioning some other guy's kid. Okay? That's tragedy number two. So both of those are standard Stone Age human tragedies. So in the Stone Age, they didn't get married, but a guy would stick around in provision for, a few years in a situation where the gal's not that into him, denies sex a lot, really isn't into it, gives it up once in a while, and we know that she strategically gives up sex when she's least likely to be fertile, and she's most likely to be cheating on him when she's most likely to be fertile. Okay, we actually know this. We've got empirical evidence that supports this. So the female can play this game and does play this game potentially in just as treacherous a fashion as the male, but it's not as often. Okay, it's not as common, and the casual mating strategy of the male hitting on the female is extraordinarily common. And so this podcast and my concept of 10 paid dates, you know, when I say 10 paid dates, it's just sort of a pleasant, easy thing to say, and it's an easy thing to remember. It's conceptual. Okay, it's the idea is, what signals are you getting from this guy? And put him off a while. Okay, let if he's super interested, he'll still be super interested. If it's such a great idea to sleep with him after 3 weeks, it'll be a great idea to sleep with him after 6 weeks. Okay, so the idea is just cool everybody's jets. And let's see if he runs off because, quote, the price is too high. If the price is too high to stick around when you're getting very positive feedback from a female who's clearly very excited about being with you, but she's not going to put out because she's going to defend her eggs for a little while, if that's too high of a price for you, then, ladies, this is Mr. Wrong. Okay? So Mr. Wrong wrote to us. Thank you, Mr. Wrong. I was very glad you gave us that question. All right. On we go.
Yeah, I've dated a little bit, my fair share, and a little more than my share. And there was always a little inkling in the back of my head for some of the bad experiences that I had that, I was just used for free entertainment, free dinner, free concert, whatever it was. And it was always just in the back of my head. But I remember that episode when you were talking about 10 paid dates, and something you said snapped me out of it when you said, why would the woman want to waste her time with somebody she's not attracted to? And it just just thought, well, I'm not that special. Like, why would she want to waste her time? It made a lot of sense.
Right. She would not. Okay.
Yeah.
Women are not wasting their time. They are vetting you. Mm-hmm. And if they defend their eggs, they're doing exactly the right thing. Okay. So absolutely. They're not, let's see if we can get a free greasy meal and a movie ticket out of this guy for this Saturday night. Gee, that's just what I wanted to do with my valuable eggs. You've got to be kidding me, people.
Yeah.
There's no way in hell do I think that some highfalutin chick who's leading some guy on she doesn't think is fancy, but he drives a big fancy car and has a Rolls Royce Silver Shadow and takes her to the big fancy country club under the chandeliers and lets her dress up and has a box at the opera? Okay. Do I think that that happens? Of course that happens. But that is not standard fare for human beings. The girl wants to go out with you because she thinks you're cute, okay? And she's thinking about that she can't rule you out as a partner. If she's guarding the eggs, that's because she's playing it careful, just as she should. All right.
Fantastic. Yeah, I really appreciate you clarifying that with me because it changed a lot, some of my thinking regarding that. And so never been happier since then. Okay.
Good.
All right, so next question. Now we look from the woman's perspective in a little bit of a different way. So, dear Dr. Lyle, I've noticed that the self-esteem of many women that I know seems to rise dramatically once they enter their 30s. And a number of women in the spotlight, including businesswomen and celebrities, have attested to feeling more confident as they age as well. Well, given that self-esteem is highly tied to attractiveness, and that women's attractiveness drops steeply with age, shouldn't women's self-esteem peak in their 20s and then go down as they enter their 30s? Could this be because women are less likely to be in the mating market in their 30s and therefore happier because they're not facing the competitive pressures of the dating market? Or is there nothing to this other than anecdotal data?
Really good, thoughtful question. A lot of different aspects of this. I would probably start out, as Aristotle would say, we check our premises. And I don't know of any empirical evidence that says that women's self-esteem rises in their 30s. None at all. So right off the bat, this looks like nothing other than an anecdotal observation. Of someone who's just thinking and has sort of seen a few instances and isn't looking at the other instances. So think about women. Your self-esteem is, we're not going to get technical here. Let's talk about what she's talking about with self-esteem. What we're really talking about with self-esteem is a thing that we're going to call confidence. And that is a confidence about how well you can compete in three major markets of life. And those three major markets are going to be mating, friendship, and trade. And so, of course, women who are successful professionally a lot of times are going to have more confidence at 35 than they did at 25. Now, that wouldn't surprise us any. The women that are in an established pair bond at 35 and were not an established pair bond at 25, just as this lady is mentioning, that are they now sort of out of the competitive pressures? They're out of the competitive pressure. And if they're in a good relationship and they're getting good positive feedback from their spouse, that the spouse finds them attractive and it's stable, then that little open loop on their competitiveness is calmed down on their esteem mechanism. So then we're looking at friends, and you know, I'm not expecting that people have any better or worse situation with their friends at 35 than 25. So of course we're going to be able to find all kinds of anecdotal individuals whose life circumstances are calmer, better, more secure at everything at 35 than at 25. Would I expect this to be the general trend? Not particularly at all. You're going to have people that are who just broke up with a guy that strung them along for 5 years, and now their biological clock is ticking, and they're feeling exactly what she also talks about. What about our looks dropping, et cetera? Now, it's going to turn out that women's looks do not drop appreciably between 30 and 40. That's because they are still basically completely fertile, and so the male's mechanisms are still extremely interested as far as that goes, as long as the females are evidencing fertility cues. I think the more sort of serious crisis of self-confidence in this arena is going to tend to take place, you know, after 45, when there's going to start to be a significant drop, and the woman's going to be noticing her own aging cues and watching the reduced action from the market, whatever her baseline was at 35 for attention from males, it's now going to be in decline. So those things are going to be, you know, however, it doesn't happen all at once, okay? It's just like aging itself. It happens really slowly, and your nervous system is adjusting all along the way, and your confidence and self-esteem mechanisms are actually much more localized to local changes in circumstances temporally. It isn't about more long-standing, you know, analysis of where the hell was I 10 years ago versus where the hell am I now. It's more like, where am I now as opposed to where I was 2 weeks ago? Okay, that's how those mechanisms are. They're much more sensitive to short-term change. That's their nature. You will notice things, and you'll occasionally be caught short. One of my very best friends, who is always really hip, he's my friend who is a rock and roll drummer and movie producer and Don Juan, and then finally found Miss Wright and married her. And he said, we're sitting in a restaurant a few years ago, and he goes, I don't know. He says, one day you look around, it's probably some birthday of mine, you know, in my 50s, and he goes, he's older than I am, much older. Not that much older. And he says, one day you'll look around in a place like this and you'll be the older person in the room and you'll say, when the hell did this happen? So, because that was never true. So, but the point is we adjust to these processes, and so we're not likely to find when it comes to internal signaling process of confidence and so forth, we're not likely to find dramatic differences from one decile, you know, of life to the next, or one decade to the next. We will see some things that can change and be really serious challenges as people get very elderly and they become less competent and they need more and more help from other people. That can be pretty rough on them emotionally, just because they can feel that literally the cues indicate that they are more cost than they are benefit. that's really hard, okay? But as a woman ages, she is not getting those cues. She's just getting cues that her market is shifting. And but everybody's does. So I think that this was an interesting question. I think the underlying premise of the question is fundamentally incorrect. And so I don't think that women's self-esteem at 35 is higher than it is at 25. And I think that I do think attractiveness issues will be impacting her internal experience, but it's probably going to be much greater as she loses market power later. And then also something else happens that wouldn't shock us, and that is that as women age, they become less and less interested in sex and romance, and they become more and more interested in their grandchildren. Okay, so the psychology of the female organism starts shifting to what? Reproduction. Okay, it's a survival and reproduction machine, and therefore, what's going on with grandchildren becomes increasingly important and fascinating. And an appropriate place for their time and energy. It isn't that they become disinterested in sex and romance, but it declines significantly, just as we would expect.
So I want to ask you about pop psychology, which is probably an urban legend, and so forgive me. But I had heard a few times in my life that, you know, men's sexual peak is in their, you know, 18, 19, 20-ish. And women's sexual peak is in their mid-30s. So what the hell does all that mean?
Yeah, it's all complete bullshit. Again, okay. This is all ludicrous. The from what I can tell, as I approach my 60th birthday out here, not too far out over the horizon, it looks all about the same. Nothing has changed since when I was 14. So this is all this is urban legend. Of course, people go through changes in their lifetime, but the notion that, quote, women are in their dirty 30s or they're in their peak at 31, et cetera, and the male is at his peak early is ludicrous. The males are pretty hot engines, you know, all the way through the first 50 years of life. Their testosterone levels will eventually drop to some degree, and therefore the amount of sexual thoughts that they have will drop, but they'll still have a lot. Okay, you're still talking about an awful lot of sexual thoughts and an awful lot of sexual interest. You may not have, because of lousy diet, you may not have that much capability, and you may not have much attractiveness, so you can't translate that into the targets you'd be interested in. So that is true, and it's true both ways. You know, men are attractive, are actually, you know, essentially highly attractive into their early 40s, and then the women, no matter what the women's age, it sort of gets stuck there. So a 60-year-old female is still interested in what a 40-year-old guy looks like, okay? And a 70-year-old female is still interested in what a 40-year-old guy looks like. The males are similarly stuck. So the males will find a early 20s female to be the best looking specimen, even though their interests will go as far as the female evidences fertility cues, which of course could be 70 years old if a woman's in great shape. But the point is that but again, everybody is stuck looking at young, attractive specimens. And as we age, we're all kind of hosed to varying degrees. All right. Oh, incidentally, there's incredibly lousy research that gets published all the time, and they'll make a big thing out of incredibly small differences. So some survey research will find that a 31-year-old females are thinking about sex, you know, 4 times an hour, but a 40-year-old female is thinking about on sex on average 3.8 times an hour. Oh, sexual peaks in their 30s. Well, really? Like this infinitesimally small difference that is so small that it is easily obscured by individual differences in the females themselves. And we're going to make a generalization about age making a difference? You got to be kidding me. So that's the absurdity. The difference in the sexual interest of the human male at age 40 versus the human male at age 18 is infinitesimally small. And therefore, even if such a difference exists, it's absurd to even discuss it. So that's how that works.
Fantastic. Well, speaking of
all right.
women's age,
yeah.
we get beautifully yeah. to this next question.
Okay.
This listener is asking you for some help about solving
okay.
this problem.
All right.
Dear Dr. Lyle, I can't stop thinking about him. I'm a 40-year-old woman, and I play in a co-ed soccer league. There's this guy on my team that I have a crush on. I'm 40. He's 25. He doesn't look or act like a 25-year-old, and he seems to like me as well. But he's kind of a bad boy. He smokes cigarettes. He doesn't have a college education compared to me. I've been trying to talk myself out of liking him, but I just can't seem to do it. I'm also ready to get married and start a family and tend to bond with men very quickly. I can't imagine my friends and family would be okay with this, but what do you say? Should I pursue this? I really want to. Am I crazy?
Oh, another question that belongs in bronze. Both of these, we had two of them tonight to get medals. We have to figure out which one we put on the top of the podium.
I wonder if the first guy is the bad boy here. That would be really cool.
Maybe so.
Hope not.
Oh, my goodness. What would I say about this? It's interesting. She's saying she's ready to get married and start a family. Well, yeah, okay. So let's hope that she hasn't already picked somebody and that this guy's getting in between that decision. It sounds like instead what she's telling us is, you know, would this be a legitimate partner? Well, let's begin with the end in mind. Okay, so let's back the camera up and try to see through the purple haze here. The first thing is that if you are 40 years old and you are wanting to get married and have a family, you should not be spending one day of your life pursuing a 25-year-old. Okay? This is an impossibility. So you could just forget it. Now, so it doesn't sound to me like what it really sounds to me like is the following, that the idea of getting married and having family is inherently interesting for a number of reasons, but it's not very high priority. Because if you're 40 years old and you're thinking that it's just about time for you to settle down and get married and have a family, you're about 5 years too late. Okay? So since you're late, you have not a day to spare. So if you're actually serious about this and trying to find a lifetime partner to be the father of your children and to support what is an extraordinarily expensive time and energy process and to have it be the love of your life, then you don't have an hour to spare, okay? So I would suggest that you give it your very best shot over the next couple of years and that you be on the appropriate dating sites and dating processes looking for who? Your peer, okay? Your peer is somebody that is 38 to 46 or 48 years old who thinks that you're the greatest thing and is ready to go all in on this process. Now, the odds of that happening are remote, but you could pull it off. The 25-year-old sounds like it might be a lot of fun. Okay, so I'm not moralizing here. What we're doing is we're trying to take a widespread sweep around this woman's psychology and trying to help her actually beat her genes. So her genes figure you don't get very much provisioning out of males anyway. It's only going to last 2 or 3 years, so what the hell, okay? Now, it depends on sort of what your financial and emotional and familial and psychological and professional and everything else circumstances are. Because if you want to have a great grand time, sleep with this guy, get knocked up, have a kid, and then share half-way custody, which he probably is a bad boy, so he really wouldn't care very much whether or not he sees his kid or not, too, probably, then, hey, have a good time. No problem, okay? Sounds like he's a good specimen. Sounds like we've got, you know, an exciting sort of situation. If you're prepared for single motherhood, then there's nothing in the world. Might as well, if you're gonna do that anyway, this sounds like a perfectly reasonable prospect because he's not going to be hassling you in custody court because he wants to see his kid very often. So all's cool. Now, so we can sort of see that we've got different agendas here. This guy may have been a perfectly legitimate target for your interests if we were looking at a Stone Age environment, but we probably are not looking at a Stone Age environment because you probably you know, most people, what's, I'm going to answer this question generically for females. Very few females have the time, energy, interest, and money and family support to basically be a single mom easily. Now, if you can and you're willing to and you're willing to head into this thing, then that's fine. I have no issue at all with this. There are women that desperately wanted to have children. And I've said, hey, look at a sperm donor. You know what I mean? Way less hassle with respect to fighting somebody over custody issues, you know, the dynamics of relationship, anything else under the sun. It's a completely legitimate way to run your life if you're up against the clock. Okay? I've seen it done successfully and watched people very happy with the results. So that's an angle. But trying to figure out what's in your best interest here has to do with what end that you seek. That's why we begin with the end in mind. We must answer, we have to try to answer those questions honestly. There's also nothing wrong with saying, you know what, I'm going to throw myself at this guy, roll in the hay, have fun for a couple of months, and then I will get on to whatever the project is that I ought to be doing to try to find Mr. Right for the long term. Okay? So there are a number of ways to manage this, but what I actually hear the woman is saying is, gee, my friends and family might be upset, but I'd really like to marry this guy. Well, you are not going to marry this guy. What makes you think that this 25-year-old flake has any interest in marrying you? Like, why would we think that that would happen? Might it happen? Might our girl be Helen of Troy on her 40th birthday? And this guy feeling like, you know, he would have killed the bear? Possibly. Okay. How likely it is? Not very likely. Men are picking up aging cues. They can compute the differential between their age and your age. And so it's going to turn out that this kind of thing, by the way, just if you look at it statistically, the odds of a relationship breaking up if the male is older than the if the female is older than the male is extremely high. Okay. And the greater the age differential, the more and more statistical likelihood that that will happen. Have I seen it happen where the male and female got together, where there was this kind of age discrepancy? Yes, I have. Have I seen it successfully? Is it successful? Yes, I have. What were the circumstances? Unbelievably stable and incredibly mature, responsible young man. I have seen it happen. Is that what this looks like? Let me see. Smokes cigarettes, doesn't have a college education, seems like a bad boy. Doesn't sound like it to me. So spin the wheel, figure out where you want to go, and take a shot at it. But this doesn't look like a long-term pair bond to build a modern family situation around. But that doesn't mean that that's necessarily what you're seeking. All right.
Fantastic. And yeah, starting with the end in mind, you said that to me recently in a conversation, and it just kind of blew my mind because I thought, you know, so many people are trying to offer advice based on what they think is the right situation, whereas you're just basically saying, well, what do you want? Find out what you want, then we work towards it. So,
but,
fantastic.
Yeah, let me give you an example of this. I stole this from Stephen Covey, okay, or Covey or whatever his name was. I read some of his stuff, and I thought, oh, there's a good idea. Among the jumble that was in there, this was a jewel. And it's actually an extremely important problem-solving principle. There are many other problem-solving principles that I use. One of them is never make a big decision when a small decision will do. So this concept of beginning with the end in mind is extremely important. And what we find when we try to hone in on what we most want in a situation, a reason why we're often confused about what to do is we've got multiple agendas. So, and the agendas are inherently in conflict. So this young lady would like to have a wild sexual adventure with this 25-year-old he-man. Okay, we know this. She would also like to be married and with kids. She would also like that. In theory, in her own head, those two are somehow compatible because she can kind of smell that everybody else is going to say, what are you, crazy? Those aren't compatible goals, okay? But she's kind of not grasping that they're not compatible goals. She's a little bit confused in this situation. So this is where we have to back the camera up and get very, very careful about what it is that we're seeking. And so, you know, from the sound of it and from the sound of her description of her life circumstances, it doesn't really sound to me like getting married and having kids is that high of a priority, or she wouldn't be saying, like, quote, now I'm ready to do this. Yeah, that seems, you know, it seems like it may be a goal, but it's not that big a goal and has never been that big a goal. The sounds like, you know, maximizing sexual excitation in the man-woman dynamic marketplace, that sounds like that's probably been a very high goal. There's nothing wrong with that. That's Stone Age process. And so that Stone Age process seems to still be dominating her decision-making strategy, as it wouldn't surprise us. And so, but she's confused as to the fact that there are, you know, there are two separate agendas here, and they are not actually the same agenda. And so beginning with the end in mind means that we struggle very oftentimes to get clear what really is the end that I'm seeking. And very often the end that you're seeking is incompatible with some other end that you would want. Okay? And this is the tough, you know, the tough struggle for clarity over what is in fact your most important value. This is the nature and the problem of integrity. So integrity is the notion that our behavior is integrated with our most important values. This can get difficult, because in any given situation, we can have multiple values that are in fact competing with each other. And it can be difficult to know which one is in fact the most important value. And we talk to one person and we get their perspective, and suddenly value B starts to get on top of value A. And then we talk to somebody else, and then pretty soon value number C starts being more important than value B, and value B is, you know, still ahead of value A. And then we go back and we go for a long walk on the beach, and we really do some serious soul searching, and then we have a feeling come up when we listen to, I don't know, Barry Manilow or Frank Sinatra on the radio on the way home, and then suddenly value A is more important again. Okay, so we don't know why it is that these things, but it can be tough. And so what I do in my work in counseling people is to immediately try to hone in as best we can. Wait a second. What's the most important value to you? Okay, what is the most important? And my advice to this woman would be, forget the 25-year-old. You are on a very tight clock. If you want a good husband and kids, you better get on it right now. And you better play really smart. And you better have 10 paid dates sitting, you know, written, tattooed on your wrist, okay? And that needs to be the strategy, because then 3 years from now, when you're out of time, then you can go play with every 25-year-old you want. But if this is the most important value to you, then that's what you do, and that's how you play the game, okay? If it's not the most important value, then let's think that through very carefully, and then that will modify our strategy. But that's the notion of how we solve these problems. And sometimes the hardest step in the process of figuring out what the hell you're doing in life and where you're going and why is to actually figure out what your most important value is. Once you can get clarity on that and get solid on that, a lot of times the rest of the program becomes relatively simple to figure out and to execute.
Fascinating. Just fascinating. Okay. All right, we've got a caller on hold, Dr. Lyle. So
okay. Let's
welcome,
take it.
Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is AJ, and I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Well, hello, AJ. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, you tried to sneak it past us. This is marvelous. Chef educator Abby J, who is a Hall of Fame vegetarian person of note. Thank you very much for calling, AJ. What's your question?
Oh, it's my pleasure. So my question, Dr. Lyle, indirectly has to do with one of your favorite topics, self-esteem. A few months ago, I saw a movie that I thought was darling. I enjoyed it. I loved it. And then you talked about it on the show and bashed the hell out of it. It was called I Feel Pretty. And it made me feel really bad.
Okay, go ahead.
So a couple weeks ago, I saw another film that I thought was wonderfully uplifting and heartwarming. Mm-hmm. And I walked out of the theater and I thought, well, I wonder what Dr. Lyle would think. I bet he would bash the hell out of this movie, too. Mm-hmm. And the movie was called Won't You Be My Neighbor? And it was a documentary about Mr. Rogers. Mm-hmm. And as I was watching the movie, I learned a lot about his life that I didn't know, like the people picketed his funeral, that a Wall Street Journal reporter said that the reason that adults were so narcissistic and had a sense of entitlement was because Mr. Rogers told everyone they were special. And I was just kind of wondering what you thought of Mr. Rogers. Do you think he did harm by telling everyone that they are special, or do you think that we're just not all special and that was a bad message that he was giving us in the 60s?
No, there's no – that message isn't going to cause any damage or trouble. And I don't know anything about Mr. Rogers. I've seen some clips of him, and because of that movie, I actually saw and heard about little anecdotes and bits about his life. And so I'm not going to sing his praises here too loud because I don't know enough about him, and I want to make sure that people understand my ignorance. But the spirit of what I understand about this man seems holy. He seems like he was a fabulous human being. And so, there's a world of difference between the very gentle and gentle and strong humanism of what I understand this man's life to have been based around. And I feel pretty that these are like night and day. They're not in the same universe. So I actually intend to see this movie when I get a chance, because I've been told by multiple friends that it's something special.
Oh, great. Well, I'm just glad, because I was worried that you might have not liked Mr. Rogers, and it would just make me feel bad, because when people that I admire like you don't like the things I like, then I start questioning my own judgment. And I think he was a really cool guy, and I thought it was a beautiful movie, and I'm glad that you don't think he's a jerk.
There you go. We can relax.
Gone. Where is it? Don't know. You're good. Nah. You're good, Doc. You're good. I'm going to begin to touch with you.
All right.
Chef AJ, thank you very, very much for that.
Thank
for
you, AJ. Thanks for calling, and I'll see you soon.
And
what
see
else?
The movie, and maybe comment on the movie when you see it on the show. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Okay. We'll do, AJ.
Thanks
for calling.
Thanks. Take care.
All right.
You bet.
Thank you so much, Chef AJ.
Sure.
That's fascinating. I just watched the webinar that you guys had last Sunday. It was just phenomenal. I loved the interaction between you and Dr. Goldhammer. So in case people don't know, there was a webinar with the Pleasure Trap. Chef AJ recorded the audiobook for Pleasure Trap, and there was a webinar last Sunday, so you can access it on the Fans of the Beat Your Genes podcast Facebook page. There's a link there, and just go on there and check it out. All right, Dr. Lyle, that's it for tonight.
That's plenty for tonight. Thank you for having me, as always, Nathan. I'm just really happy that your place is up and going. It's beautiful, fabulous, and I look forward to coming down next month and seeing you again at the Fasting Escape.
Fantastic. Everybody loved it. We got some pictures up on the website, fastingescape.com, for those of you interested. And Dr. Lyle, have a wonderful, wonderful evening.
You too. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe. Write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.